Hi, this is Jeff with the SBCA podcast. If you'd like to be a guest on our podcast or would like more information about the podcast, please contact us at sbcapod@gmail.com. That's sbcapod@gmail.com. Let's get to the show. SBCA podcast. I am your host, Jeff, and I'm so glad that you're here with us today. This podcast is for you. Camp directors, camp managers, camp volunteers, whoever you are, this podcast is designed to give you the information to make you successful to help your camp grow to its fullest potential. Content, connections, and camps. That's what we're doing here, and we hope you enjoy. Let's get on with the show. Hey, and thank you for joining us on the SBCA podcast. Today, it is my pleasure to have Rich Lowry with Trinity HPSI on with us. Rich started in camping in 1999 as a cowboy on a 1,200-acre horse ranch and a Christian youth camp in Tennessee, and was later selected as the head cowboy horse trainer in 2001. He left camping in 2002 and spent 16 years in law enforcement, where he held the rank of sergeant until he was medically retired due to an injury sustained in the line of duty. Rich joined the team at Trinity HPSI in 2018 as the manager of outreach and member services, and was later named the director of outreach and communications. Rich graduated summa cum laude from Liberty University with a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and a minor in business. He also holds an associate's degree in interdisciplinary studies from Liberty, as well as a certificate in critical infrastructure protection through Texas A&M Extension Services. Rich, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the invitation. I'm looking forward to what we can unpack here in these next few moments with your listeners.
Absolutely. Now, we're specifically talking today about stewardship and saving money. I mean, that's a big topic for camps. It's a nonprofit organization. We're always looking for ways to enhance the ministry impact. And Rich, what are some of the ways that you guys have found, that can help camps really increase what they're trying to do?
Right. And Jeff, that is, this is the crux of what we do. When Steve Claypool, our founder, started this back in 2000, really the concept was in 2004, his wife, Ms. Gay, recognized the need for this for churches, camps, schools. Steve's professional experience led him to be a certified purchasing manager for a sizable gas company. And through his experience, he found that vendors weren't always vendors did not always have their best interest at heart. The status quo tended to impede savings opportunity, where people chose relationships over stewardship. So with the prodding of his wife, Steve started Trinity Ministries. And really from the get-go, it was a concept that was kind of foreign. The group purchasing concept was kind of foreign in the camping world, but the Lord blessed and it just took off. But really, when we think about money, and we had a previous conversation about that, the concept of stewardship, when we think about how do we save money, we tend to immediately go to the budget sheet and we start crunching numbers, maybe looking for how we can run leaner and meaner, if you will, without really first considering what our role as a steward really means. And while there are two basic things that we do with money, right? We're either bringing money in or we're spending it. The issues involving money are not always as simple or as reduced to, you know, do we have an income problem or a spending problem? It may not always be an either or proposition. It actually could be neither. It could be both. It could be you're not spending enough in the right places or too much in the wrong places, obviously. But you not, may not be taking advantage of the right opportunities or spending too much time cultivating relationships with the wrong people or not cultivating relationships with the right people. I mean, we all want to make more and spend less. But as Christians, we should be looking at money differently. It's a resource entrusted to us by someone else, right?
Absolutely right. You know, we're called to be those good stewards of the financial resources we have, and for the specific purpose of not gaining more of those financial resources, but spending those to enhance the kingdom and right. to advance the cause of Christ. And so we have a duty and a responsibility to make that money or that resource or whatever, make the best use of that. And I love what you said there is, you know, sometimes we're spending money, we're trying to save money to the cost of what could be later on down the road, something that, you said it better than I am, but later on down the road, it actually ends up costing us more if we're just trying to spend less in the outset. And I think that's important to note. I mean, there's some investments that we need to make as directors and as leaders that can impact farther down the road, end up saving us, not just financially, but end up making a bigger impact later on.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, even before the fall, Adam was charged with tending the garden, right? Stewardship's intended to be a lifelong pursuit. It's something that's continually evolving and intentionally cultivated. And we know that the fall distorted this, right? Our nature has fallen. But before we even take that first step in looking at saving money, stewardship is really the foundation of everything. So sometimes it may make sense, like you said, or like we alluded to, that it may need to be an investment for the long term, and not just think about that immediate cost savings, which is important, obviously, and that's what we do. We want to save you money, but I often tell people we don't want to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes the wheel may need to be reinvented. There really are no categorical imperatives here. But when you boil it down on the stewardship side, it's fundamentally about our God-given dominion over his creation. It's more than just about money. One of the best examples of this in scripture, obviously, is Joseph. We all know the story, how he was the favored son. He ended up being the hated rival to his brothers, to a slave, to a trusted servant, to a prisoner, and then to a ruler. So, you know, God's hand can definitely be on us, especially if we approach what he's entrusted to us from a standpoint of stewardship. So there's actually a really good article I found on this. It was written back in 2012 from the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics. It was written by a man named Hugh Welshel. And he actually quotes another essay from a Mr. Bill Till talking about those four. He kind of boils it down to four principles of biblical stewardship. And I'd like to unpack a few of those here. The first one being the principle of ownership. And that's evident in scripture. We talked about that. The earth is the Lord's and everything that's in it, right? The psalmist talked about that. God's own it, but God owns it, but we manage it for him. The second principle outside of ownership is the principle of responsibility, where owners have rights, stewards, which is what we are. We have responsibilities. Nothing belongs to us. We're merely responsible for how we treat it and what we do with it. And then the third is the principle of accountability. So we're not only stewards of resources, but we're also stewards of abilities and opportunities. That doesn't mean we have permission to do whatever we want or whatever we see fit, but we exercise dominion that he gave us under the watchful eye of the Creator. And that fourth principle, before we get into some of these other specifics, is the principle of reward. So even though we're merely stewards who have been entrusted with resources, whether it's people, time, opportunities, money, of course, facilities, talents. You know, it's what we do with those. And that's evident in the parable of the three servants who were given some of their master's money, right? The two servants that did well by it were told, well done, good and faithful servant. So when we think about all of those things with stewardship, we can finally get to where we first tend to think stewardship starts, and with money and possessions. But it's really way more than that. It's about not wasting those resources and making wise decisions.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And as you were talking about that, that's the parable that came to my mind. You know, we're given talents of our masters, you know, from our master's coffers, and it's up to us to make the most of those, not bury them in the ground and let them go to waste, and then just say, okay, well, you gave me this opportunity, I'm just going to give this opportunity back to you the way that it was given to me. And really, that is our charge as good stewards. We're to maximize the ministry that God has presented over to us, to make the most of it using those. I love that you mentioned the talents of your people, because I think one of the most difficult things for directors is to dive into what the talents are and the natural bent of your staff and your volunteers are, in order to maximize their potential there on the property, which in turn maximizes your ministry potential there for you. Absolutely phenomenal stuff. Talk to a little bit more about the non-monetary ways that we as leaders in camp can be better stewards towards those resources.
Sure. The you know, outside of money, you know, you have people and opportunities. One thing you mentioned there was the talents of your people that God has brought to you for whether it's summer staff or whether it's your full-time staff. So one thing that's really critical that I find is important is with vendor interaction, right? Directors may not necessarily be the best person suited for that interaction with the vendor. As I mentioned, you know, a lot of times what we found is people tend to allow a longstanding relationship or the status quo, if you will, interfere with the stewardship concept. So, you know, you may want to find that person on your team who it really has that personality of boldness, but that can remain diplomatic. I mean, that's good at conflict management. So essentially, you know, you need to be able to have someone who can hold vendors accountable without obviously losing your testimony. I mean, I had a recent interaction with a local business owner here. He said he was actually opened his own mattress store here locally, and he had previously worked for a major supplier. And he asked his previous boss, he says, "Why is it that our worst customers always get the best deals?" Obviously, we don't want to, our goal is not to be the worst customers, but his point was well taken, that these people tend to negotiate boldly when it comes to price or service. I mean, as you saw from my bio, in a previous life, I was in law enforcement. I was 16 years in that. I learned a lot. God protected me through it all and brought me out of it in 2018. But there were officers that I interacted with over that 16 years that stood head and shoulders above others when it came to conflict. I always had the mantra that you could always catch more flies with honey than vinegar. This doesn't mean you're going to allow someone to take advantage of you. I mean, I'd always say, "I'd be as nice as you'd let me." I would oftentimes greet drug dealers with a handshake, but I might end up in a fight for my life in that interaction. But, you know, as Christians, we obviously don't want to be the customer that's always complaining, but we need to be bold enough to make educated decisions that are right in the spirit of stewardship. And don't let your feelings get involved. Obviously, be firm, be bold, but be kind. People will respect that. So, you know, that's one of the ways is to either find someone on your team, or as a director, cultivate that within yourself to find out if you can build those skills. It's really important to be able to have that person, that right person, in that right position on your team.
Yeah, and I think that's often it's a struggle for directors because we see ourselves as the chief steward of everything, and we've kind of got to have our either our hands in the pot of those things, or we're so busy that we entrust somebody to be able to do that for us. And let's face it, a lot of the guys, especially in Christian Camping and the Southern Baptist Camp Association, you know, we're in it for the ministry part of it. We're not high negotiators. We're a lot of us ministry minded and not as business minded probably as we should be. That's where a ministry like Trinity kind of comes in, and they can actually help out with some of that stuff. And that's a little bit what you guys do. Tell us a little bit more about how Trinity helps in some of those regards. I know you spoke about, you know, negotiating with vendors and some of that stuff. Tell us a little bit more about that in detail.
Sure. So when it comes to the specific part of stewarding money and resources rather than people, time, opportunities, that's really where we come alongside you and can help. That is the foundation of our ministry. I mean, simply stated, we're a free national purchasing group. Member camps, they access significant discounts with vendors across multiple industries. So whereas you, like you said, that business mindset, or you having to have that person, that key person on your team that is having to negotiate with vendors, that's where you have a multi-billion dollar buying power behind you when you're a part of our buying group, where those negotiations have taken place at such a high level with a significant amount of buying power that it really, especially on the food service side, tends to be one of the, if not the best way that you can accomplish that goal of stewardship. Because one, you're not having to spend the time and effort of doing all of that research where you have to get multiple bids. And I'm not saying that's not necessarily something you wouldn't do. We still want to be make educated decisions. But with a large multi-billion dollar GPO behind you, those prices have been negotiated, or not prices, but margins. We don't negotiate price. We negotiate margins, because in a free market society where the market determines can change, right? The price can change on supply and demand, as we can see currently with the current trends in the market, right? What we do is when we negotiate those contracts and then we open those up, since 2005, as a matter of fact, is when we partnered with our corporate partners over at HPSI to become their official camp and ministry arm. So one of the big things that we negotiated with them when we first approached them about allowing camps was to make sure that camps were able to access the membership, the contracts for free. So there's not any fees involved. There's not any risk if camps were to join us or to try an agreement out. There's really not any risk involved to the camp whatsoever. So food tends to be the number one area in that money saving and dollars saved. On average, a camp that's using the Trinity HPSI program with a broadline food service distributor saves about 10 to 20% over street pricing. The street pricing is just where you're negotiating directly with the vendor and the rep is setting your prices, where our agreements have really two primary columns or principles, if you will. And one, that's margin control. I mentioned that, where we negotiate margins. That's what they can charge you. That's what they can make off of you, right? What it costs them above their true cost, which is what it costs them to get a product ready to ship to them, ready to ship to you as their customer. That's their true cost. So the margin is what they can charge you over that. So we negotiate really low margins, meaning it really limits what they can upcharge you for something. And then on top of that, we've negotiated with manufacturers to have what's called deviations. And that's just direct pricing, special pricing allowances that we've negotiated directly with manufacturers. And these manufacturers obviously are providing a product through a broadline food service distributor, but that deviation flows through to your invoice. So food tends to be the number one area where camps save money. Outside of that, our propane, we have two national propane suppliers that tends to fall in the secondary side as far as actual dollars saved. And the same principle there, it comes down to purchasing power. And then janitorial sanitation agreements is the third as far as dollars saved. And outside of that, we've got some other really great agreements. The one with Lowe's has been a huge hit. Lowe's has been such a phenomenal supporter of Trinity and what we're trying to do with camps. It really has grown. We've seen it grown exponentially over the last few years. And it again, it's free. It's just a way that you can save, you know, 5 to 20% on your order, sometimes more than that. They offer a special credit account for Trinity members, gives you an extra 2%. You get 5% off when you buy and another 2% off your statement. So it's things like that where we really come in. And another side to that, Jeff, is the time involved. I mean, you may have, when you look at your current situation as a director or as a particular leader of a certain part of a camp, you know, the status quo is what we tend to be tied to. So what we have to consider is, you know, what would the cost of inaction be? You know, some of you, like I mentioned before, may have been working with a vendor for a long time. And I want to be fair to the vendors. We do have a lot of good reps that have a heart for camps and ministry. And some of them, as we do comparisons, are doing okay on price. But for the most part, especially on the food service side, the vendor or the reps, the sales reps' compensation is tied to what they can get for the price. And reps, if you're on a street account where a rep's setting your pricing, they have a lot of licensure or freedom to do what they want on the price. So sometimes the cost involved with maintaining that status quo, or we get asked this all the time, you know, is this going to affect my rep? Well, at the end of the day, your rep will probably make less money on your account being on a program because you are getting, we've locked the margins. They can't upcharge you beyond that. But ultimately, we've successfully partnered with reps all across the country because they use our program to get new business. It also helps them defend the current account from competition because the pricing's so competitive. But it also they also use it to gain new business. So it's a win-win-win for everybody. I mean, the businesses get to have a higher loyalty rates, right? Because you've got camps that are happy as long as the things don't break down on price, quality, and service, right? Those are the three main things of any vendor relationship. Any of those break down, there's going to be a problem. But we certainly handle the price side, and it's up to the vendor to make sure that quality and service maintains intact. But, you know, it takes that pressure off of directors, off of food service directors or even a maintenance guy to say, you know, where am I getting the best price? So if you get hooked in with, you know, one of our agreements, then you can rest assured that you're getting a really good price on that commodity that you're purchasing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for simple guys like me, one of the ways that I like to understand it is you go from having the purchase power of a mom and pop shop to having the purchase power of Sam's. You know, that kind of a thing. And I love that it's not a competition. I mean, you're not trying to oust the reps and you're not trying to do those things. You're encouraging us to be good stewards, to look at what we can do through this program. If you're getting something that's better from your rep on the other side, absolutely go forward and do that. And, you know, I know for us, you know, from food service to the Lowe's account thing, I mean, all of that has been extremely helpful. And I know that if more camps take a look at that, man, what a impact that would be. And it gives more purchase power the more camps are involved and things of that nature as well. So that again goes back to that stewardship model of how am I being the best steward of my resources. Now I'm not having to go negotiate with 15 different vendors. I can go and I can look at what Trinity's already done the work, and I can take that research, maybe use that versus one other vendor that we have preferred or something of that nature, and just say, hey, what can be done here? Or I can just say, you know what, they've already done all that needs to be done here. I think this is a phenomenal price. It's a lot better than what we were doing, and utilize that for the betterment, or, you know, maybe given an opportunity for them to do something that they weren't anticipating being able to do because it was price restrictive. So that is phenomenal.
Yeah, and absolutely, Jeff, we actually run into that from time to time. We had a camp that recently joined us. And we did comparisons on both their food and their propane. In some camps, they just all the stars align and they're doing a good job. But we're gonna tell you if you're doing a good job. We would rather under promise and overperform. If you're in a good spot, we're gonna tell you. It's not about getting you on a program, which is how we make money off of the vendors. The vendors pay us. That's how we keep the lights on and take care of the families at Trinity, is the vendors pay us. That's how we make money. But we're about saving you money. That your best interest is at heart with us. So if you're in a good spot, we're going to tell you. If you got something better than we can offer, we're definitely going to tell you and let you know. So that's the culture and ethics that we have. And we really, it comes down to that stewardship. We want to support you in that effort. And like I said, stewardship is not about being self-serving and certainly not tyrannical. So we definitely have a heart for ministry when it comes to that aspect of it. So, one of the other things there, Jeff, is outside of the money, one of the things that I feel that, camps may be able or should maybe do, I don't want to say a better job. Another way to consider stewardship is when we stewarding, people and opportunities when it comes to, identifying your stakeholders. So this could fall really more under the stewarding people and opportunity side of things. So when I talk about stakeholders, right, that's anybody that could be affected or affect the camp. I ran across a good article in Camping Magazine by Greg Cronin, and he talks about the methodology. You're talking about getting competing for discretionary dollars and staff for that matter. I mean, this time of year, it's crunch time as you guys are trying to get staff. So this is another side of stewardship that can help you run more efficiently and maybe even reduce customer acquisition costs in the future, right? We all want repeat business. But when it comes to those stakeholders, that could be, there's really three main categories of stakeholders, and that's your internal stakeholders, like your current campers, families, and staff. You have your external stakeholders, like vendors, business partners, associates, and donors. And then you have potential stakeholders in your camp. So your first group, the internal group, of campers, families, and staff, that's really your base. They're your biggest supporters. You already have the buy-in. I mean, they feel valued and they appreciate increased camp connections. And what I'm hitting at here is thinking about long-term. We talked about that long-term aspect. And this is gonna, this to me seems critical. I mean, I've got three camp-age kids. Every one of them, and in fact, my youngest, this will be his first year, but the other two are high school. So they've been to camp ever since at least middle school. I, as a parent or a stakeholder in those camps, I've never received any type of, outside of registration, any type of email survey, phone call, email blast from those camps they've attended. And neither one of my high schoolers have been to those camps, have ever been approached or presented with the opportunity or material or information about maybe being a part of that camp when they're old enough as a summer staff. So these are things also, as you look at stewardship, are critical to you building that your camp and extending beyond just your geographical location there. And not only cultivating the relationship with current stakeholders, but increasing that stakeholder portfolio, if you will.
Yeah, I firmly believe in retention cost you way less than trying to gain new staff and stakeholders as well. And I think that's the same thing. And man, what an opportunity that we may be missing out on several camps and several with several of our stakeholders and our staff, our summer staff, those things. If we're not staying connected with them, if we're not cultivating those relationships through times outside of just that registration time, like you're saying, a lot of our camps and conference centers do things outside of just summer. We should be reaching out. We should be making those connections, even if it is just a newsletter. Maybe it is just a survey that says, hey, here's a 5-question survey. Tell us what you think about this. We're thinking about doing this. Just involving them in the process, it endears them to you and to your ministry and to what you're doing. And that's less resources and time and things that you have to spend on getting a replacement for that. We just did an interview with Jimmy Huffman a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that he said in that episode was that an empty bed is a lost opportunity. You can never get that back. And wow, what I think with this and with that combined, it's really something that as directors, we need to be taking a hard look at. How are we retaining and being good stewards of those stakeholders that we currently have in order to maximize ministry with them? Are we reaching out to them and saying, you can be a part of this ministry beyond your time at summer camp? This is how you can do that. For us, we're able to accept donations, but still, even if you're not, you know, this is an opportunity that camps can have to say, this is how you can stay connected with camp by volunteering, by giving, by doing these other things beyond when their quote unquote time at camp is there and gone. So what a powerful thing.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, you have to think long term. I mean, today's campers will be or could be tomorrow's staff and or summer staff, and that staff could turn into tomorrow's year round staff and or even a youth pastor, a pastor, lead pastor, a donor. I mean, those are missed opportunities that, you know, camps could be taking advantage of. You know, I worked at camp, did a couple summers volunteering and was on staff. And I get it. It's grueling. The summer schedule is absolutely grueling. And then after it's over, you just want to unplug and disappear for a few months. But this is where that effort, that going the extra mile, being intentional and cultivating those relationships. I mean, ultimately, you know, if you had the opportunity for young campers, maybe middle school would be appropriate to start planting that seed about. I mean, I wanted to work at camp from being a camper. I mean, that's where it started for me, the desire. So that, you know, I know that's happening to other kids, right? They see what's happening there, the ministry, evangelism, lives changed. I mean, that's ultimately what you're about, furthering the kingdom. So, you know, a lot of kids find inspiration there, and it's always easy to have that initial emotional response while you're there. But once they get back into the life of, you know, getting plugged back into social media, video games, school, sports, whatever outside of camp, that can wane a bit. So maybe consider having a very intentional effort with your campers to talk about what it looks like to work at camp. You know, you can really sell your core values and missions. Our mission, make it interactive. Maybe, you know, find that person on your team who could really make an awesome, a quick little recruiting video, if you will, to see how everything that you do and how camp and how they can be a part of that. So follow up and add them to your communication outreach efforts so they can stay plugged in. You never know where these kids are going to end up in life. I mean, we have to, and this is something that, and I don't want to rail on us. I'm a conservative, obviously, conservative Christian, and this is something that we tend to not do well. We don't play the long game as well as our counterparts do, and this is something that maybe we need to do a little better at in seeing that the next generation, bringing them up as the future camp leaders, stakeholders, donors. So I wanted to touch on that a little bit. That article was really interesting. And I've been out of camp for years now. So maybe a lot of you guys or a lot of you folks are doing this really well. But to me, it's from an appearance aspect. Anecdotally, I had not experienced any type of interaction where a camp had tried to extend that camp experience beyond just the registration, the transaction, if you will. You know, you're viewed as a transaction in a one week session, and after that, you don't even think about a camp. So that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. And for, you know, I can only speak for myself and my situation. One of the struggles that I have with that is I have a vision, but I want that vision to happen now. I don't want that to, I don't want that 5-10 years down the road. And I think what you said about playing the long game, we really have to get good at that. If we're going to be good stewards, if we're going to invest in the kingdom, we have to realize that that investment that we're making is not automatically, we're not automatically going to see the reward from that. There may be years that we're seeing as that investment slowly and gradually begins to grow. But as we get down towards the end, as we get down towards that ultimate timeline, we're seeing that God's increasing that exponentially year by year by year. If we're only patient enough and willing enough to make that initial investment to set that out there for a long-term goal. And that's hard sometimes, especially as a visionary leader or as a camp director. You know, we see things that need to be done or things that we want to do, and we want those right now. You know, that has to be happening right now. So I got to save money on it right now, and I got to have it done right now, and I've got to have the staff at this point right now. But a lot of times those things, especially when you're cultivating staff, you're cultivating your stakeholders, you're cultivating your community around you, those things take time. And it's an investment in that time that I think is well worth the effort, and seeing that in a long range type of a vision, not in a one shot and done. Because the temptation is, I'm going to try this and I'm not going to see an immediate result, so I'm going to give up on it.
Right. Absolutely. You know, another side on the of your, that's your internal stakeholders. On your external side, you know, even your GPO partner, like us at Trinity, I have several camps that plug me into, you know, they capture my email address because I'm interacting with them. They plug it into the, I've received blasts throughout the summer from the Trinity side of things, or throughout the year from camp. So, I mean, we want to know at Trinity, we want to be a part of your journey. It helps us stay informed about, you know, staff changes or what's going on, or whether you've had a catastrophic event, you know, whether it's something that we can help get you plugged into the right vendor. So, you know, even your GPO partner like Trinity could be considered a stakeholder. So don't be afraid to, I guess my whole point is don't be afraid or hesitant to plug people in your communication, even if it's something as simple, and I get it, it's time consuming, especially if, you know, in some stakeholders, you may have to take a situational model with, you may gauge your interaction with them or adjust it based upon their level of power and influence, if you will. I mean, some of them, it may be just plug us into a blast. Others, you may be making that personal phone call to follow up. That's time consuming, but it certainly would personalize it and help galvanize that relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, something you said right there, I really want to key in on is your stakeholders can be vendors and people like that, because they are also invested in your success as well as you are. Because if you don't succeed, if you're no longer able to give them business, then they're losing out as well. So they need to want to see you succeed. So they need to be involved in seeing what's going on. Trinity wants to be involved in seeing what's going on. And that just makes good sense. You know, we've got people that want to sell us products. They want our business. They want to partner with us in that way. Well, we need to kind of include them. And that gives them a little bit more information on what we need, how they can help us, how they can benefit. They need to see when we're sending out those things of, hey, we've got a work day coming up going on. You know, how many of our vendors would probably offer to send a couple of people to do a display or do something at one of our events? Great way to just increase that stakeholder base and get people involved that can help you later on down the road in ways that you may not have even imagined.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's critical that this group knows your program and they understand your culture. If you can get the buy-in from your vendors or other stakeholders in the community, even if it's a contractor, a politician, a regulatory agency, other areas that you may not consider, financial institutions, educational institutions, professional associations, places like that. I mean, if you grow that base, I mean, it really is going to help you not only be salt and light and in consideration of the Great Commission, but also, you know, help you grow your camp's influence, and not only in the community but beyond. So, yeah, it's something that, and again, I'm not in your shoes, Jeff. So it's been a long time since I've worked at camp, but I get it. It's a challenge for you guys, but we want to help you on the Trinity side, outside of being your stakeholder and staying in tune and connected with you all. What's going on, whether, like I said, it's a catastrophic event or you've had a change in staff or something like that. I mean, we really want to be there for you all, especially on the money and resources side, to help you guys, you know, save money ultimately and be good stewards of what God's given each of you. I actually have, you know, in light of that concept of money, you know, I have a market report here that has been shared with us, with our corporate partners over at HPSI. If there's enough time, I'd like to be able to go over some of that, just so your listeners can kind of have an idea about what the second quarter is going to look like in 2022 as we're considering how to save money, how to adjust. You know, a lot of this is not really done in a vacuum, right? A lot of this are great principles outside of the crazy market that we're seeing right now and conflicts and various things that are just blowing. It's hard to plan when you've got the volatility of prices. But if we've got a few seconds, I'd like to go over some of this to kind of help your listeners plan for maybe even shortages or make adjustments before they're surprised with supply chain issues.
Absolutely. Please do share. And then if there's a PDF or something of that report, we can make that available as well, if that's something we can do.
Okay. So one of the, and this is specific to, I'm gonna blend a little bit here of this report, plus some other information that I've gathered from a supply chain panel that I recently did with a few other vendors. But some of the top takeaways of this report are, of course, number one, right now, the Russia and Ukraine war. So while we don't really expect this to cause a short supply situation as a result of the conflict, the immediate impact has been increased price volatility, like on key commodities such as oil, wheat, corn, cooking oil, for example. So that's one of the things to consider. And again, it's not necessarily that we're going to be able to have influence over that cause, but we might be able to mitigate some of the effects of that. So specifically with commodities like in soybean oil, one of the derivatives of those oils are used in packaging material. This has been a huge issue on the food production side, with packaging, not just the food itself, but a lot of these derivatives are plant-based, the oils that are used in packaging. So that's been an issue. And really with the supply chain, you know, while a supply chain network can look differently for each camp, if you will, there are several ubiquitous elements that are driving the crisis across the entire global supply chain outside of the Russia war. I mean, you have the inflation and surging prices, and nobody needs to tell you that prices are going up. We all see it in our grocery bill, our gas tank. Everything's more expensive. The shipping and freight backlog, which is complicated by the labor shortage, increases in fuel cost, decreases in driver availability. There's probably, I think the last estimate was we're getting close to 100,000 as far as the shortage of truck drivers. So that's affecting everything in the supply chain as logistics involved, right? There's a truck driver involved somewhere in there. So that's one of the major drivers here. But on the food side specifically, poultry, for instance, hatchability has been an issue. It's one of the major poultry suppliers announced that the hatchability is down 20%. They have higher broiler mortality rates. There's a larger shortage in, say, pre-cooked chicken rather than the partially fried or ready-to-cook category. Those lower crop yields are causing some issues, again, not with just the food, but some of the corn and soybeans. In addition to what's going on in Russia or in Ukraine with the Russia invasion, the shortages there are also causing, like I said, those issues with residuals or derivatives from those products. But what we've seen on the production side on the food is a lot of suppliers are reducing their SKUs or their stock keeping units altogether. They're eliminating product lines altogether. We just got an announcement from Butterball yesterday. They are cutting quite a few products out of production, some of them for the entire year, some of them are just through August, but that would definitely affect, you know, a lot of the camps, as camps are, you know, may run through August. So that's going to be an issue. On the merchandising side, on camp merchandise, a lot of the products, especially textiles and t-shirts, come from China. A lot of the suppliers, that's where they're getting them from. And as we see now, they're in the middle of a lockdown, so it's only going to complicate that. And I'm not trying to paint a doom and gloom picture here by any means, but really, there's some mitigation efforts here that might help you guys plan for shortages. So on the food service side, you need to be requesting up-to-date information from your vendor. So what that means is, like, vendors will have, they'll have a weekly or monthly report on what products they're not going to have. So you need to be requesting that report from your vendor, and then also make sure that you have good substitutes or even alternate items available for your menu. So this is part of the stewardship model, right? So we want to be able to plan for, not react. We'd rather be able to respond rather than react. The issue with, like, camp merchandise, probably a good thing you're going to need to do there, and this has come from several sources, that you're probably going to want to reduce your inventory, like have a couple of really good selections rather than too many. That way you can know what you have to offer. And it also helps you continually, you know, expand your brand and your imaging. But on the food side specifically, and here I've got to sort through this here, Jeff, so give me just a minute. On beef, you're looking at an increase. This is quarter two, 10 to 20% overall, 4 to 9% on the ground beef side alone. Poultry is going to be up, expected to be up 8 to 16%. Pork, anywhere up to 14% increase. Liquid eggs is a big one. I know that a lot of camps depend on, up another 5-11%. Oils, we mentioned that, 4-12%. So there's definitely going to be increases, continually increases in price due to a lot of these issues. And again, this is where a program like we offer, like I said earlier, we don't lock price. We lock a margin. Now, typically with the market that, you know, inflation remained fairly steady around 2%, you didn't have huge increases, but everybody's going to see price increases regardless if you're on a program or not. The good thing about being on our program is the vendor or the distributor is not able, on the food side specifically, is not able to upcharge you more than what our margins, which are low, specify. So that's just one thing to expect. So on your, as your outlook for this year, as you're looking at planning your menu, try to have a plan for mitigating some of these effects. And a lot of this has to do with just having alternate items, reducing your maybe options in your store or even on your menu. So that's just some things to plan. If you need more help with that, by all means, call our office. I mean, we can help you find, if you're on our program, if you're like, Rich, we need to really take a look at our menu. Is there a way that we can dial this down or find some manufacturer deviations that you guys have that we're not taking advantage of in our menu to help reduce some of those costs or even help you find alternative items for those menus?
That is phenomenal. So as we're ending up here, we're kind of landing the plane. Tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. How can they, if they're not already connected with Trinity, or if they've been connected and they haven't really, you know, they kind of got out of the habit of using you guys or whatever, how can they reconnect with you guys? How can they get the information that they need?
Sure. The office number, you can call us, and the office number is at 615 six seven two 0229-615-672-0229. You can reach me by email, and that is rich, R-I-C-H dot Lowry, L-O-W-R-Y, at trinity-USA.net. So it's rich.lowry@trinity-USA.net. Another big resource for current Trinity members is our members portal. So that is the password protected portion of our website that contains all the information that members would need to stay up to date on agreements, how to get connected to specific contracts, or how to get a discount with whatever vendor you want to utilize. If you need to get a discount, you're looking at buying a new John Deere mower or tractor, you can go to our mower maintenance section, and we'll have information there on how you can do that. So those, you know, give us a call, email me, get plugged into the members portal. If it's been a while and you're like, Rich, I can't get logged in, give us a call. We'll get you hooked up to it. Or if you're not a member, it's just a few forms. We get you set up in the membership, and then you can utilize whatever agreements you find beneficial to you.
And again, it is a free service for you and for your camps to be able to use. So please check this out. It is well worth being a good steward to just go and get all that. I'm going to put all of Rich's contact information that he just shared with us into the description of this podcast. So please go and check that out. We want to make sure that all of our camps are maximizing their stewardship in whatever way that God has leaded and gifted them. And we want to give you every opportunity to be good stewards of that, to increase those talents and those things that you've been blessed with by God. Rich, thank you so very much for being on the podcast with us. Thank you for the information that you shared, and thank you for your heart for camp ministry and for ministries that can utilize your services, and just for still being a part as a parent in camp ministry and encouraging that. And what an encouragement for us to be good stewards for all of the different types of resources outside of just the financial resources, but definitely included in that. So, Rich, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me. I hope you guys have just an awesome summer. May God continue to bless you all.
And that was my interview with Rich Lowry of Trinity HBSI. If you're interested in getting in touch with Rich, you can reach him on the office number of 615-672-0229 or by email at rich.lowry@trinity-usa.net. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. We're so glad that you're on with us. We're always looking to bring you some good and relevant content. Keep those suggestions coming. Send them to sbcapod@gmail.com, and we will see you next time.
This has been Jeff with the SBCA Podcast.